Some people pay other people to turn a wrench, swap their oil filter. Me, DIY, all day. This isn't convenience, it's confidence. Purelator 20K oil filters. Clean oil, more miles. Over 99% filter to perfection. Only at Walmart.com or select Walmart stores. Purelator, keep it purring.
Colts, Hidden Killers Investigates. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Before Samuel Bayman had followers, before he had 20 wives, before federal agents pulled children from a sealed trailer on a highway in Flagstaff, he tried to take his own daughter. According to federal records, Bateman attempted to claim his only daughter as a spiritual wife. He reportedly offered her Doritos and $50. I mean, what an offer. And told her that if his feelings were right, he'd make her have a child. That language comes from an FBI affidavit based on an interview the girl gave it to advocates in 2020. She told her mother what he said. Her mother took her and left. They got a restraining order. That should have been the end of Samuel Bateman. A man who tried to groom his own child should have been finished in any community anywhere, right? But Short Creek is not any community. After that restraining order, after his only wife and daughter fled, Samuel Bateman didn't lose standing. He gained followers. Within months, he was calling himself a prophet. Within a year, fathers in that same community were handing him their daughters, girls as young as 9 years old, and calling it God's will. Not because they didn't know what he was, because the system they were raised in told them that when a prophet speaks, you don't ask questions. You obey. This is the story of how that system works, not just Bateman. He's a symptom. The disease is older than he is, and it has a name. It's a cult. The Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the FLDS. And if you've heard of it before, it's probably because of Warren Jeffs. We're going to get into all of this. It's a five-part series this week about cults. And we're going to start doing a five-part series on cults every week. New cult every week. You get a cult, you get a cult, you get a cult, you get a cult. Everyone gets a cult. It's going to be great if you like cults. I hope you'll join us. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you get podcasts so you don't miss any of this, whether it be an Apple Podcast, Spotify, wherever, or YouTube. Hit subscribe and please give us your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube, especially if maybe you are a member of the FLDS and got the hell out. We would love to hear your perspective. The FLDS split from the mainstream Mormon church after the LDS officially abandoned polygamy in 1890. Over the next century, it built its base in a remote pair of towns straddling the Arizona-Utah border, Colorado City, Arizona, and Hilldale, Utah. Locals call the area Short Creek. By the time Warren Jeffs took control of the church in 2002, after his father Rulon's death, the FLDS had roughly 6,000 to 10,000 members. And Jeffs ran every dimension of their lives. He controlled all marriages. He was the only person authorized to perform them, and he could dissolve them at will, reassigning wives and children to other men as punishment or reward. He controlled all property through the church trust called the United Effort Plan, holding land estimated to be worth over $100 million. He controlled information, no television, no internet, no nasty podcasters, no outside media. He had security teams patrolling the streets in blacked out SUVs. He had cameras in homes feeding back to a monitoring room in his own house, and he controlled language. Under Jeff's, FLDS members were not allowed to use the word fun. It was too unrestrained. They had to say enjoyable. Think about that for a second. The man who dedicated the vocabulary or dictated the vocabulary of thousands of people A man who expelled members and then held their families hostage to force them back. A man who, according to multiple court records and survivor testimony, assaulted girls as young as 12, sometimes in front of his other wives and followers, sometimes in a large domed structure built specifically for the purpose. A man who eventually had 78 wives. When Jeff was arrested in 2006 during a traffic stop outside Las Vegas, he'd been on the FBI's 10 most wanted list. It should have been the end. He was convicted in Utah, then extradited to Texas, where a jury found him guilty of aggravated assault of minors. He was sentenced to life plus 20 years for good measure. He's still in a Texas prison. He will be there until he dies. Or the second coming. I think he's betting on that. But the machine he built didn't die with his freedom. It fractured. Hundreds of members left Short Creek. Some stayed and tried to rebuild. A former wife of Jeff's helped turn his 28,000 square foot compound into the Short Creek Dream Center, a refuge for people leaving the FLDS. That was the hopeful version of what came next. The other version is Samuel Bateman, which is who we are about to dive into this week. Here's what you need to understand about the FLDS to understand how Bateman happened. The entire theology is built on a single structural principle. One man rule. One man holds all priesthood keys. One man speaks for God. One man controls marriages, family, property, and salvation. Questioning that man is a sin. Disobeying that man means losing your family, your home, and your place in the afterlife. Who doesn't want to keep their place in the afterlife? The entire community is engineered from birth to follow a prophet without hesitation. So when the prophet goes to prison, the question isn't whether someone fills the vacuum, it's who and how fast. Jeff's tried to prevent it. From behind bars, he issued edicts voiding all existing marriages and prohibiting any new ones until his release. He continued directing church operations through coded letters and monitored phone calls. According to the Department of Justice officials, there's evidence he still directs day-to-day operations, including excommunicating members and deciding which women are assigned to which caretakers from his cell in Texas. His followers built small wooden rooms from hand-chopped wood and sat inside them for hours, simulating his prison cell so they could feel what the prophet endured. Some reportedly still do. That level of devotion did not evaporate, but it did create a bit of a fissure between those who still obeyed a voice coming through a prison phone line and those who wanted a living, breathing prophet they could see and touch and follow in person, a prophet who could perform marriages again, a prophet who could tell them their suffering had meaning. Some just left the cult and said, this is a little wacky. Some were like, hey, triple down time. Bateman saw that shit coming. When cult researcher Christine Marie and her filmmaker husband Tolga Kattis first encountered Bateman around 2018 to 2019, he was nobody. A former machinist and real estate agent from Colorado City, raised FLDS. He was broke, homeless. He asked to borrow $20. He didn't have a single follower, no resources, no authority, but he had the language. He'd grown up inside the system. He knew how the one-man rule worked. He knew the script. The cadence of revelation, the posture of prophetic authority, the emotional leverage of promising salvation through obedience. And he knew his audience, people who had been conditioned since childhood to hand their lives to whoever claimed the title. By 2019, Bateman declared himself the rightful heir to Jeff's prophetic authority. The FLDS leadership, still loyal to Jeff's, pushed back. They issued a written revelation from Jeff's in prison calling Bateman and his followers gross and wicked men. Oh, those gross and wicked men. You can't gross and out-wicked us. I mean, come on, we're Warren Jeff's here. We set the bar. Nobody's going to out-gross or out-wicked us. And reaffirming that Jeff's was the sole prophet. But that rejection didn't stop Bateman. It strengthened him. Breakaway prophets don't need institutions' approval. No, they just need the institution's refugees. And Short Creek had plenty. Families estranged from the mainline FLDS after Jeff's purges, people who'd lost their homes when the United Effort Plan Trust was taken over by the courts, believers who needed a prophet and would accept the nearest one. Bateman recruited from the most broken corners of the community, people who had been expelled, shunned, or left to drift when Jeff's imprisonment dissolved the social order that they'd known their entire lives, people who didn't know how to live without a prophet telling them what to do, who to marry, how to think. And within a year, the man who'd been borrowing pocket change was driving a Mercedes, filling two SUVs with his growing collection of wives, and pulling flatbed trailers around Short Creek's red dirt roads with women sitting in neat rows, singing for anyone who passed. Displayed, as one witness described it, like prize horses. His followers called themselves Samuelites. They numbered roughly about 50, and they believed every word he said. Then the fathers started giving him their children. That's the detail that separates this case from the familiar cult narrative. Bateman didn't snatch those girls from playgrounds. He didn't lure them through social media. According to federal court records, Maroney Johnson, one of Bateman's most devoted followers, gave six of his own underage daughters to Bateman. Six! Ranging from age 9 to 17. Another follower, Liddell Bistine Jr., gave his 9 and 10-year-old daughters. These were not kidnappings. They were offerings. Fathers standing in front of the man who claimed to speak for God and handing over their children because they believed or were conditioned to believe that this was the path to salvation. Just give us your kids and you get prime seating in the afterlife, and unlimited nachos. That was one of the big things. Unlimited nacho bar, actually. All the toppings you can eat on the other side, but you got to give us your kids. Okay, I made that part up. But, you know, I think that might be, I don't know. It'd be really hard to get me into a cult. But I'm telling you, if they offered unlimited nachos, and it's that, you know, the nacho cheese, like not the melted cheese, but the stuff that glows in the dark, you know, the Taco Bell stuff, the stuff that is a chemical concoction that's not truly a cheese product, in my opinion, but is something heavenly, something only you could call nacho cheese. Okay, I don't know what the hell that was all about, but I'm telling you, everybody has a trigger that could pull them into a cult. For me, nacho cheese just might be it. And when people came asking questions, those same fathers covered for him. According to court filings, Bateman was questioned by law enforcement at least twice in 2020 for taking minors as wives. Questioned. Like, you know, were you jaywalking today? Or no, okay. What about this? We're hearing rumors that you might be taking 10-year-olds as wives. Oh, you are? Oh, okay. Glad we could clear that up. Hey, did you hear about the nacho cheese? Both times, the children's guardians or parents told officers that Bateman was simply a family friend. The system designed to protect these girls' parental authority, the presumption that parents act in their children's interest, was the same system delivering them to a predator. That's the pivot point, not Bateman himself. He's a man with a script and a willing audience. The pivot is the architecture. The FLDS didn't produce Samuel Bateman by accident. The one-man rule, the total authority over marriages and family, the theological probation on questioning or prohibition on questioning. It's a predator manufacturing system. Warren Jeffs used it. Samuel Bateman copied it. The names changed. The mechanisms don't. Short Creek has been raided before. In 1953, in 2008, prophets have been arrested, tried, convicted, imprisoned, and every single time the machine rebuilds and installs a new operator. Makes you want to rethink that whole freedom of religion thing, doesn't it? By the time federal agents finally caught up with Bateman in 2022, he had amassed more than 20 spiritual wives. According to prosecutors, at least 10 were minors. The youngest was 9. He had a loyal financial network, followers who brought him bought him two Bentleys and a Range Rover, which is what you do, of course, when you're taking children wives. If you're the parents of those kids, you're like, this guy deserves a Bentley and a Range Rover. Let's go talk to Lenny down at the car lot. It's a big sale, and there's free hot dogs and balloons for the kids, and maybe nachos. He had operations spanning Arizona, Utah, Colorado, and Nebraska. He had the theological cover to demand anything he wanted from anyone who followed him. And he had done it all in roughly 3 years. That's efficient. From broke and borrowing gas money to running an interstate operation built on the bodies of children. Wow. He's going to give TED Talks. All of that is coming in this series. How he built the operation, who funded it, the couple who infiltrated his inner circle and secretly recorded evidence that helped bring him down. The traffic stop where children's fingers were spotted reaching through the slats of a sealed cargo trailer. The kidnapping plot he orchestrated from a federal detention facility. The sentencing where a teenage girl stood in a courtroom and read from a list written in red ink. Everything she'd accomplished since escaping his control and told him to his face that she never needed him. But the foundation is here in this first episode, because the question everyone keeps asking about a case like this is, how did nobody stop him? It's a good question. It kind of misses the point, but we're going to get into all of that. So be sure to press subscribe. People didn't fail to stop Samuel Bateman. The system that raised him, that raised his followers and raised the fathers who gave him the daughters, that system performed exactly as designed. A prophet commands, followers obey, children are currency, and anyone who questions the arrangement loses everything. Warren Jeffs built that system and weaponized it for decades. He's serving life in Texas prison. He will never walk free again. And from the ashes of his imprisonment, in the same community, on the same red dirt roads, inside the same theological framework that told women and children their only value was obedience, another man rose, claimed the same title, ran the same playbook, and destroyed another generation of girls before anyone outside that world managed to intervene. The question isn't how Samuel Bateman became a prophet. The question is what kind of place keeps producing them, and whether anything short of dismantling the entire structure, not just the man at the top, but the belief system that gives him power, will ever be enough to stop it. That's the question we're going to be digging into, and we're going to be telling the story throughout this week. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of it. Here on the channel, Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Just search it wherever you get podcasts. Press subscribe. Do it right now so you can take us on the road with you. So when you're out in the car, you're like, all right, let's hear some crazy cult stuff. Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Press subscribe and get access to all of it. All right. And give us your thoughts and your opinions on Substack and YouTube. I'd love to hear your thoughts, your stories, especially if maybe you survived a place like this. And we are going to interject some humor into this because it's horrible. It is utterly freaking horrible. It's the darkest shit you can imagine, you know? That's the only way, I think, to kind of get through this sort of material without wanting to, you know, go and drown yourself in a vat of expired nacho cheese. Nightmares that I have at least once a week. It's scary. See, a little bit of that here and there. Not making fun of these people. I mean, these are victims. We'll make fun of the prophets, the people who fell into this hellhole, who were bamboozled. I mean, we're talking people that knew no different in many cases. When you were raised and this is the norm, I mean, and a lot of these people were. It's easy for you and me on the outside here to go and say, yeah, this is crazy. But you have to understand, they look at us on the outside and go, they're crazy. I can't believe they're doing that. It's fear-based. It's insidious. It's horrible. And it's run by architects, leaders, prophets, quote unquote, that know how to pull the levers of human beings to get what they want. And I think a lot of them have convinced themselves that they are, in fact, prophets, that they have this spiritual divinity about them. It's delusion. When somebody believes something, good luck changing their mind, right? All right, press subscribe, and we will continue the conversation in the comments section. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now, and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
From ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast, this is Murder at the U.
Did you say someone got shot?
November 2006, a college football star on his way to NFL dreams, gunned down in broad daylight.
His bone crying, and he said, "Coach, they killed him."
No weapon, missing witnesses, conflicting accounts, and for years, no arrest.
She insinuated that the Miami PD had done nothing, and it became a little bit more accusatory.
The case goes cold, rumors spread, and the truth gets buried. Until now.
His world could come crashing down. According to him, it was over.
The ending, something no one saw coming, because this story isn't over yet. From ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast, this is Murder at the U. Binge the full season right now, wherever you get your podcasts.